Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. Today, it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Yankel Meislin. Yankel was a secular Jew growing up who was active in sports and his community until the temptations of the streets led him astray at 14. He became a drug dealer who, at the age of 19, was selling a high volume of narcotics to the extent that he hired his own gang-affiliated bodyguard. After numerous attempts by his family to save him, he ultimately turned his life around when given an ultimatum to leave the life or be on his own. He currently has 17.5 years of sobriety and counting. Yankel's next stop took him to a rehab facility in Florida, where he became acquainted with the 12-step programs. Realizing how precarious a situation he was in, he decided to give his all to his recovery. This included a spiritual journey that led him to find his God of his understanding in his native Judaism. Through some serendipitous meetings with a Hasidic rabbi, Yankel was drawn into this lifestyle. Slowly but surely, he took on more and more traditions until he himself would be counted as a Hasid. Today, Yankel works with men and young adults to discover their true identity, whatever that may be, and ignite a spark for his clients to truly be themselves and live what they consider to be their life's mission. Yankel does this by coaching them, questioning them, and supporting them in whatever way serves them best. His clients have gone on to discover their true passions and identities and create amazing results in their own lives. And Yankel, your bio reads like a made for the big screen movie. So
I certainly hope so, Dave, one day.
I certainly hope that happens in your lifetime, but it's a pleasure having you on the podcast. As I mentioned in the pre-chat and just before we came out, I've been looking forward to our conversation for a long time.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
You're welcome. Yeah, to get started, I usually ask my guests to tell our audience about the experience or experiences that have shaped your life path. So I know some of that has come out in the bio. So what do you want to add to that? What do you want our viewers and listeners to know about you?
So that's a great question. I think that the ultimate drive, the ultimate thing that really helped me to shape the way in which my life ended up going is making a commitment to be as an action word as opposed to be as a pronoun. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Be as a pronoun is like when I was a drug dealer, right? I didn't really have all of the necessary components to be, you know, the ultimate drug dealer. I wasn't a psychopath. I wasn't really comfortable with inflicting violence and ripping people off and all of the things that a drug dealer, quote unquote, needs to possess. So for me, that was more like living as a pronoun of drug dealer. It wasn't my true self. And then when I came to the Hasidic community, eventually, the being of who I decided to show up in the world as was as a verb, as like action. This is the thing that totally encapsulates my entire essence and all of my good qualities and all of the things that really give me vitality. And that for me has been a game changer.
Yeah, I think there is a difference between be as an action word and be as a pronoun. And I'm certain, and we're going to get into what you do with your clients in your coaching service. but I'm sure that's one of the things you must emphasize with them is be as an action word, as opposed to be as a passive pronoun.
Absolutely, 100%. And what I found is that when people make a commitment to being as a verb, amazing things start to occur for them in their life because they're now in action and they're living what they would consider to be their life's mission, their purpose. And that is extremely powerful. When anybody shows up for life in that way, it's very attractive and very effective, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the more we can be empowered to take responsibility for our behavior, the more I think as coaches or as therapists, we take more of a facilitative role. We just help keep people on track with their individual goals or action goals. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch because the less responsibility we can take for somebody, the greater the success we're going to have.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's like the trick to how I ended up getting out of my predicament that I was in when I was dealing and on the streets, et cetera, is when my parents finally said, we're giving you a choice. Either you can leave that life or leave our house. You can't have it both ways. And on the one hand, it seems a little bit harsh for a parent to say that, but really that was the most loving thing that anybody had and probably has ever done for me, because that forced me to change the trajectory in a totally different way that absent that, statistically speaking, I would probably not be alive right now, if not for that.
For me, and in my past, so it seems like a past lifetime ago, Yankel, I was an addictions counselor. And one of the things that individuals with substance use issues told me is that it was a crisis that was either created for them through their own actions or through the, for lack of a better term, ultimatum of somebody close to them that said, look, either you do this, either you embrace sobriety or you get help for yourself, or there's no place for you here. And when those crises are created is when individuals, I think, with addiction issues have their version of a spiritual awakening to say, I can't keep doing what I'm doing anymore. I need to embrace a different path. That doesn't mean they're necessarily going to have a successful recovery the first time they're in treatment. No, but it may take two or three or four times. But the fact of the matter is the seeds have been planted, and no matter how long it may take, individuals will eventually get there. And that's something that I think a lot of people lose sight of with the stigmatization around addiction, that there are people that are successful in recovery. Although it may take multiple attempts, they become successful.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I also think that it's really difficult if you really love somebody. The natural tendency is to try to save them. And the way that we imagine saving would be like is, okay, you need money. Okay, fine. I'll bail you out. You got caught in a DUI. I'll pay for your lawyer. I'll bail you out of prison. However many of those types of scenarios, the natural desire is to try to really save the person without realizing that's actually just further prolonging their addiction, not really what true saving would actually look like.
Exactly. And everything that families do and concerned friends do is out of love. They think they're doing out of love, and they don't realize that it is prolonging the addiction. And I think when they do, the other thing that we as coaches or therapists have to deal with is the guilt that they feel for why didn't I see this sooner? But they couldn't have seen it sooner because they just were not educated or schooled on looking at the signs of addiction. They were too busy living in it to try to get out of it. So
it's also a natural tendency, a natural instinct. If your child is suffering, you naturally, instinctually, you want to do everything you possibly can to alleviate that. And I think that the big fear behind all of that is, what happens if I let my loved one really, truly face plant? Because when the stakes are so high, and they tend to be when you're dealing with addiction and alcoholism, particularly drug addiction, the pit could end up, unfortunately, in one of the three dreaded places, institutions, jails, and death. And that is a really scary proposition, that if you let go of the reins, that it could come to one of those three. On the flip side, if you don't let go of the reins, it could also come to one of those three.
Exactly. And basically, we're the masters of our own destiny. We create the reality that we wish to create for ourselves. And one of the things that I'm sure you've probably have done similar things in your coaching practice is to talk about consequential behavior. I tell my students at Utica University, I said, every behavior has a natural consequence attached to it. But make sure you choose wisely. Choose the consequences you wish to experience wisely. And if the consequences are negative, keep in mind that those were consequences of your own making, and you need to be accountable for that. And once you become accountable, I'm going to be here to help provide some options for you to change the script and change your life path.
100%. The flip side of what you're talking about is going through life living as a victim. Everything is happening to me instead of created by me. And if you are a true, real victim or a victim of your own making, either way, the options that you have appear to be or can be extremely limited, in which case most people will just throw up their hands and say, okay, this is my lot. And this is what I'm, you know, this is how things are and how things always will be. And therefore, change is not required of me. Change is not, you know, even if I do something different, they imagine that, yeah, that it will produce the same. And so paralyzation becomes like the comfort blanket.
Exactly. And if they're in a relationship where they're in a situation where they're feeling validated, where they're feeling useful, I'm sure you probably have seen this within and outside of your coaching practice. Because they are uncomfortable with success, because their measure of success was different during their self-destructive phase or their addictive phase, they may tend to self-sabotage anything that's good because they're not comfortable with the new rules, or they don't feel they are deserving of happiness or contentment.
Yeah, that is so true. I've seen that on multiple occasions. But the truth is, even as a regular person, regular meaning a non-addicted person, even a person who might not have a tendency to fall into victim mentality, everyone has a certain tendency to sabotage themselves in one form or another. It just is a matter of how amplified it will appear in your life. For example, road rage is a form of self-sabotage, or even cursing out the guy without actually acting on it. It's still a self-sabotage in some form or another, because you allowed somebody else's actions to take over your own emotional state. But if you just remain in your car and say, screw that guy, it's not as bad, obviously, as somebody who goes out and decides that they want to inject fentanyl because of that. So it's not a scene, but still there.
It is. And I still think we reinforce the individual for, even if they get angry, not getting angry in a way that's going to cause harm to themselves or somebody else. And then once we do that, I think then they may be more open to some other constructive suggestions to, here's how you can channel your anger into something positive. So
definitely. Yes. It starts out with self-empathy, or even empathy directed towards the other person. Once that kind of pierces the shield that people have around themselves, then you can start to recreate something different in place of the old non-useful sabotaging habit.
Exactly. Tell our listeners about Ignite Your Flame Coaching. What's the process you employ to develop an action plan for those requesting your services? And what's the demographic off the top of your head of those who request services from you? What are some of the issues that they come to you with?
Great question. Thanks for asking that. So the people who come to me are usually men who are about 25 to 45, maybe 50, possibly, depending on their situation. And usually the reason why they're coming to me is because they are not satisfied with how their life is going in one way, shape, or form. So I've dealt with people who are massively successful in their business careers. And I say successful according to their bank account statement would have them feel like they're a massive success, but their home life is in complete tatters. They barely see their children. They don't have quality relationship with their wife, let's say, for example. And then there is other people who their business situation might not be that great, and they would like to improve that. And then there are people who are in the middle who their business situation is okay, you know, like somebody making a decent enough living, and they're doing fairly, they're feeling like something is missing from my life. I'm not living the most full life that I possibly can. And so what I try to do when they first come through the door is to figure out what is behind what they're saying, because most people are blissfully unaware, I would say, of what's really going on with them, because it's painful to really look at. And so I have to become a master of reading between the lines of what they're saying and asking pointed questions that will highlight what it is that they're actually experiencing versus what it is that they're saying on at face value, because there's usually a dream behind the dream, right? Most people will say, you know what I really want? I want to be rich and spend time with my family. But then it turns out that right now they technically could be spending more time with their family, but they don't. So why aren't you now? What is stopping you? And why aren't you the massive success that you say you want to be? And then you find that there's a whole bunch of contradictions that they're living with that prevent them from reaching the goal that they would like to reach.
What do you believe the source of those contradictions are? Is it their home environment? Is the messages they heard growing up, the messages they heard outside of the home, genetics? What do you see as being the driving force behind those contradictions that with your clients?
That's a loaded question, to be honest. It's definitely a mix, right? So some people will come from a home where they were constantly berated by their parents to do better than they had been doing. And so that kind of creates like this chip on their shoulder syndrome that no matter what they do, that's not the right term, but whatever, no matter what they do, it'll never really be enough. And so they have a choice now. They're either going to become like something like an overachiever, or they'll just throw their hands up and say, you know, no matter what I do, I'm never going to really be good enough, so I won't do it. And then there's other people who might have been bullied as a child, and that plays a role into what's going on. And then there's a third category, which is people have natural tendencies. You can't, and most people's natural tendencies are pretty fixed. What I try to do is figure out what exactly those natural tendencies are and not try to make a square peg fit into a round hole, but rather amplify the good parts about them. Let's say somebody who you can look at somebody's biggest defects and figure out what is their biggest strengths based on that, right? So I want to try to amplify those biggest strengths, as opposed to really try to change the core makeup of somebody, because that usually is fruitless, I found. It's very difficult to really change somebody, like an introvert to an extrovert. It's very hard and very not fulfilling along the way. And rather, what could be done is to amplify the good parts of an introvert rather than try to make them into an extrovert.
I think that's a great point, because I think one of the things we need to emphasize is the strengths perspective. we need to take a look at what people can do as opposed to what they can't do. So it sounds like what you do in your coaching practice, you have a very individualized approach for everybody based on the strengths that you and that person identify collaboratively. That determines your next steps. Is that a valid assumption for me to make?
100% true. I do not find it fruitful to put everybody into the same form or cookie cutter form that I can churn out. Rather, each one is highly individualized, where in the first session that we decided that we're going to work together, we'll sit, we'll create an agreement that outlines every single thing that could go wrong in the relationship and try to head that off so that it's not unspoken expectations. And within that agreement, we will set goals and each week take a look at those goals and try to work towards that. But each person has their own set of goals, and how, I guess it's up to me to figure out what would be the best way to get them to those goals based on, like you said, the collaborative strengths that we highlight together.
Yeah, again, that's a great approach, Yankel. I think that's the only way to go, because I think individuals are aware of what they can't do, but a lot of times they're so focused on what they can't do, they're unaware of what they can do. So it's important that we really emphasize that piece to say, look, even though you feel that you have had setbacks in these areas, these are things that have gotten you to this point. These are the strengths that have gotten you here, that have allowed you to survive, that have allowed you to develop resilience so that we could collaborate in the moment. And I think the more they are reminded of that, the more empowered they become, and the more they're going to come back because they value the relationship that you're building. And they see you as being somebody who is safe, somebody who is genuine, somebody who is truly looking out for their interests. So you really have, I think, really a sound approach to engaging individuals with you in a coaching relationship.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I definitely agree that unspoken in what you said is like, if I was only just highlighting their failures all the time, people don't really like when that happens. But when you also are able to point out their failures in a loving way and also at the same time amplify their, like, the good aspects about people, who wouldn't want a support system like that, a friend like that? I would say that most people, if you look at your own personal life, the friends that we choose to take on and surround ourselves with, you have that person who's always down and this is bad and that's bad and this isn't going to work and that's not going to work. Like, people tend to want to stay away from a person like that. Whereas the optimistic friend that you have who's amplifying you, or at least in theory, it would be great to have a friend like that. Let's put it that way.
But a friend who's not going to let you own your limitations, or just simply allow you, that person, to see themselves only through their limitations, to see themselves through the potential that they have to make a positive impact in the world.
Yeah, definitely. That's probably the difference between that optimistic friend and a coach, right? So the optimistic friend will not challenge you because they're afraid of losing the friendship for good reason. But in a coaching relationship, that's really a big part of it is once you think you've gotten to the outer limits of what you're capable of, to challenge them to go another step further and another step further and really see it through to where that could potentially get to.
And I think good coaches will know when to push, they'll know when to pull back, and they'll know when to create new challenges for that individual to achieve. And the best individuals that I've worked with, a collaborative relationship, have been those that don't mince words, and those that will call me at one, look, you're not meeting your true calling. You have more potential. Let's see how we can get you there. And I think you're right. That's the difference between a coach and a friend. A friend won't do that because they're afraid to lose the friendship. But a coach is not afraid to lose a relationship because the expectations are clear right from the get-go that I'm here to push you. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to be a guide. I'm here to push you to your greatest potential. And sometimes you might not like what I say, but it's going to be honest. It's going to get you to think. And it's because it's in your best interest, because I care about your success. That type of confrontation will get individuals to listen, for one, and that type of confrontation surrounded by, I'm doing this because I care for you, is going to make the message at least more listenable for them.
Spot on.
Good. I guess we can end the podcast now. That's since I hit the spot on piece, but no, we're going to keep going. I read your book, The Journey of Oz. I love the book for a lot of different reasons, but before I get into that, I want you to tell me how that book, what it's about and how it complements or drives your coaching practice.
There was a particular point in my coaching where I was meeting with different prospects and they had no background in coaching. They had never been coached before. They didn't know really what it was. There was a lot of misconceptions. And so when we would get into our original conversation, we weren't really meeting the full potential. And I felt like I was doing a lot of digging in places that I didn't really need to dig into. So my idea behind creating The Journey to Oz was, if I could have a general guide as to what all of the things that I have had experienced up to the point that I had written it in a way that is engaging and asks questions of the reader, then when we come into our first session together, we can already start at a much higher level, right? If you're starting off originally without reading without knowing anything about coaching, they're here on this lower level of understanding of what's going on. They may or may not be living in the victim mentality or whatever else is going on in their life. But if they have a resource to get the conversation up to here before you even start, I thought that sounds like a great idea. Mm-hmm. That's what I would love to do.
I'll tell you what I like about the book is that your client reads a chapter. Before they go on to the next chapter, they have to answer a series of reflective questions at the end of each chapter based on the material that you have presented to them. And I'm assuming they review that with you before they go on to the next chapter. So I like the fact that you build in mandatory, for lack of a better term, reflection at the end of each chapter. You need to reflect on these questions. You need to see how they apply to you. You need to see how he can utilize your self-reflection to work with me to reach your goals before you go on to the next step. And it may take them 3 or 4 bites at the apple before they move on to the second chapter. But it's a beautiful individualized approach that takes into account that people are going to move through their action plan at their own pace. And I think you accommodate that just based on the way you have your book set up. And by the way, I apologize. It was a journey to Oz. I said the journey of Oz. So my apologies for that.
No worries.
Thank you. All right. Are you ready for a scenario from me?
I'm ready for a scenario. Let's do it.
All right. So let's pretend for a moment that I'm an individual who wants to request coaching services from you. I've heard glowing reviews from other of my male friends about your work, and I'm looking for some help. I'm a highly driven, perfectionistic individual who takes setbacks very personally. I tell you, look, I want to change how I look at setback differently. I realize there's going to be setbacks, there's going to be bumps in the road, but I take them too personally. They immobilize me. So, what approaches would you begin to use to help me achieve the objective of learning how to integrate or manage setback better in my life?
First of all, I want to say to you, thank you very much for being open to describe what's going on and being very acutely aware of what it is that you're dealing with. That's a very important skill to have. And also, I want to tell you a story. There's a Chinese proverb, I think it is, or a Chinese fable, maybe, that really applies very well to your situation. So there was once a farmer who had a horse, and this horse was entered into some kind of competition, and the horse won the competition. So all of the farmer's neighbors come over to congratulate him, And the farmer greets them and says, who knows whether or not this is good or bad? And the neighbors are a little bit befuddled by the farmer's lack of excitement over the fact that his horse just won the prize at the fair, but they go home and don't think about it again. About a week later, a group of local thieves heard about the farmer's prized horse, and they come to the farmer's house and they steal the horse. So now all of the neighbors of the farmer come and they want to console him. And they say to him, we're so sorry that your prized horse got stolen. And the farmer's response to them is, who knows whether or not this is good or bad. And then afterwards, about a week later, the horse managed to run away from the thieves and he comes back to the farmer. But not only does he come back by himself, he also brings with him a bunch of wild ponies together. And these are ponies that have never been trained. And so the farmer and his son go to train these wild ponies. And as the farmer's son is training the ponies, he gets bucked off one of the mares, I think is the word, and falls down and breaks his arm or his leg, either one. And now the neighbors of the farmer come to console him again, and they say, we're so sorry that your son fell off the horse and broke his arm. And the farmer responds the same as every other time. He says, who knows whether or not this is good or bad. And then a week after that, the army comes through to conscript soldiers for a war that they were fighting in some forsaken place, but they can't conscript the farmer's son because he is now lame and his arm is broken and he can't possibly fight. So the moral of the story being, the way that things appear in this current moment is that everything is going to hell in a handbasket, right? You might think that the failure that you just experienced is the end all be all and it's the end of the world. But the fact of the matter is, who knows whether or not this is good or bad? So let's try to find a way in which we can make this failure and the actual best thing that ever happened to you, which is the way that I tried to live my own life. When I was down and out in the drug dealing world, that whole scenario where I was inches away from death or jail or a mental institution became the single best thing that ever happened to me. Without that, I never would have become a Hasidic Jew. I wouldn't have married my wife. I wouldn't have six beautiful children. I wouldn't have become a coach. And I wouldn't be living what I truly feel is my mission in this world. So let's try to find a way in which we can make that failure to be your ultimate success.
I like that because it reminds me of Carl Jung's work with the shadow element. He defined the shadow element as the person you would rather not be. That's what society, I've talked about this on with other guest contributors, but society has this value, well, many in society have this value that happiness is the key to fulfillment when it really isn't. Happiness is one part of the deal, but it's also embracing everything that happens to us, either that we assess arbitrarily as being good or bad. So I guess what you're telling me, what you may be telling me, or what I need to think about, there are a couple of things. One is failure and illusion. Maybe it isn't just failure. This is a setback, not even a setback, but this is an event that gives me an opportunity to look at ways that I can improve. So in that way, I should look at it as a gift.
Yeah.
And it's that the beliefs or that I bring into a situation allows me to assign whether or not I see that event as being good or bad. So past experience matters and dictates how I see the present.
Absolutely. I think there's a part in my book, The Journey to Oz, that kind of highlights this experience. Imagine you were walking with your friend going on a hike on a summer day, right? And you're loving the view. It's beautiful and everything is dandy. And then all of a sudden it starts to pour and you're soaking wet from head to toe, drenched to the bone, and your friend is standing out in the rain and dancing, and you can't figure out, like, how could you possibly be dancing right now? Like, I'm soaking wet, I'm cold, I'm not comfortable, this just ruined my day. And your friend is, I love the rain. This is amazing. There's going to be beautiful flowers that come after this. So that really highlights the dichotomy of how important it is to have the correct mindset on what we're experiencing. And we tend to have a negative view on how we're experiencing things, but that is like part of the work, is to figure out how to not go into that mode in an automatic way and to really live on purpose.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes after the most torrential rainfall is a beautiful rainbow at the end of it. Yeah, there you go. Speaking of rainbows, for those that will be seeing this on YouTube, Yankel has a beautiful picture of Niagara Falls in the background with a rainbow over the falls, and it's really a majestic, awe-inspiring picture. And I still look at the awe that the universe manifests for us in a lot of different ways, and that rainbows always have been something that have been awe-inspiring for me. So thank you for that, Yankel. If there is one thing you wanted to leave our viewers and listeners with today, what would that be?
There's a common saying that usually has a negative connotation, that looks aren't always what they appear. So we normally associate that with, oh, everything looks great, but it's probably not great. But what if it was the other way around? What if the things that we assume are not great really actually are great? And that is a way to live, a way to be as a verb, a way to show up to life with a lot of vitality, and the exact opposite way that society, I don't want to say dictates, but what normal society would consider the way in which we should be living. And I reject that. I think that if you can find the rainbow in the rainfall, then you're living it up.
I like that. And what I hear you saying is that everything that happens to us is in service to us, whether we know it or not. It's for our good, and it's part of the grand universal design.
100%.
My last question for you. Tell people how they can get in touch with you, find out more about your services, purchase your book. What's the best way for them to do that, Yankel?
All of those things can be found on my website, igniteyourflamecoaching.com. You can find there a way to get in touch with me. You can find a link to The Journey to Oz on Amazon, all in one place.
I like that one-stop shopping. That'll be very easy for me to put in the program notes. Thank you for that. And Yankel, thank you for being a valuable guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope we could do it again sometime.
It would be my absolute pleasure, Dave. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.